Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate that you listen to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and also leave us some feedback. Rate us. Give us a review. Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoy.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
John Canzano. Raw. Sourced. Fresh. From the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, built by High Caliber Millwrights, this is The Bald-Faced Truth.
It's been a great show. If you want to get a podcast of it, make sure you're subscribed to the Bald Faced Truth Radio Show on SoundCloud and iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Jim Joyce, former Major League Baseball umpire who called three World Series, three All-Star games, is with us. I hear he's putting down hardwood floors. Are you putting down hardwood floors?
After Kay's mom passed away, my son moved into the house, and so we started renovating. And I just said, well, let's see if we can put some hardwood floors down. And so I just tried it, watched a couple of videos on YouTube. Said, well, you know, if I get too far into it and I really mess it up, I can call somebody after that. And so it actually came out pretty decent. So I just continued to do it and still, you know, just kind of like that halfway handyman a little bit. So it's a lot of fun. I really enjoy working with my hands and stuff. So I really enjoy it.
Jim Joyce, Beaverton resident, former Major League Baseball umpire, retired in 2017. He's with us here on the Bald-Faced Truth Radio Network statewide. Jim, who were some of the personalities you enjoyed umpiring? And who were some of the guys that were more difficult for you? I'm sure you get asked about that all the time. But when I mention those two things, who do you think about?
Well, I kind of make a little bit of light about, you know, people ask the question, who was your favorite player? Who was the worst player? Meaning argumentative-wise and stuff like that. But the funny thing about it is that my very first ejection in the major leagues was Ken Griffey Jr.
Oh, man.
It was the first time that he was ejected. It was my first major league ejection. So then the next question usually is who's your favorite player? My favorite player in the major league was Ken Griffey Jr. Ken Griffey Jr. had a personality as big as Safeco and the Kingdome. He was just a very likable, always had that smile. And I know everybody, when they hear this, they'll flash back to the Ken Griffey smile. Because he always had a smile on his face. He was very rarely in a poor mood or argumentative. Very, very rarely. He was just a kid when I ejected him. He was 19.
What happened?
And, well, he kind of looked at three pitches right down the middle for some reason, and he turned around and he gave me one of those expletive deleted that you can't say on the radio or TV,
right.
And I had to eject him. And he never said a word after that, not a word, and just walked back to the dugout and, you know, just walked straight through in the clubhouse. And Jim LaFever was the manager, came out and kept yelling at me, Jimmy, you can't throw the kid. You can't throw the kid. And I said, can I say this to you? He goes, no. And I said, okay, this conversation's over. And LaFever went back and understood. And but that personality always sticks in my mind. And not only that, it was my daughter's favorite player. And that had nothing to do with my on-field performance with him or anything like that. But another one was Lou Piniella. Lou Piniella was a classic. And Lou and I shared the same vice of smoking at one time. And I called the play in Milwaukee one night against Zambrano. Thought he was Babe Ruth when he came up to the plate. And he hit a ground ball in the infield, and for some reason he ran like a scared deer, and he actually beat out the play, and I called him out. Well, Piniella came out to me and says, Jimmy, the game's going to get over with soon enough so you can go inside and have a cigarette. And I mean, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
What are you going to say? And Piniella was a great personality. My wife actually was just watching videos that came up on YouTube, and they were showing today, I guess today's the anniversary of Bobby Cox's record-breaking ejection. So we were sitting here giggling about that because Ted Barrett actually got the Bobby Cox was another one. I just told Kay, on the field, Bobby Cox was as intense as anybody I've ever met in the game. off the field, Bobby Cox is probably one of the nicest people I ever met in my life.
It's interesting when you talk about ejections, because, by the way, Ken Griffey Jr. ejected three times in his career. Bobby Cox, ejection 132 was his last one.
Right.
So, okay, there it is, 132. But give me an idea as an umpire, because you said when Griffey turned to you and he goes off on you with a bunch of profanity, that's the line that is drawn. That's not in the rule book somewhere. Where do you learn that as an umpire, or why do you have to do that? Is that a respect thing? If you let a guy do that to you, the other guys are all watching?
Well, I believe that, you know, somewhere down the line, first of all, you, through experience, is how you gauge on whether or not you're going to eject somebody from a game anyway. And, you know, it's learned basically through experience going through the minor leagues and everything like that, and then getting your feet wet in the major leagues. The rule of thumb basically is if somebody gets personal with you by saying you so-and-so, then that is cause for ejection.
Yeah.
And actually there is a rule in the rule book that says that you will not argue with umpires, but that rule is very rarely enforced.
Eject everybody.
And you wouldn't have any players left. And when it gets a little bit personal, you know, and they use the handle you or your, and that usually is caused, you know, is the cause for an ejection usually. And, you know, the funny thing about it is if you did some of the stuff or say some of the stuff that has been said to umpires on the street, you'd have organized chaos.
Yeah.
It's, but you know, we also take into account that, you know, I've had ejections where I've been called some of the worst things you'd ever think of. But you know, the next day, usually there's no grudges held on either side.
Yeah.
And it's all, I guess, put under the frame or title of it's part of the game.
Jim Joyce is
Ken Griffey actually. To finish the story about Ken Griffey real quick. Ken Griffey, the next night, there was a knock at our door, and a gentleman came in, and he says to me, Mr. Joyce, Ken Griffey would like to apologize to you. I said, okay, bring him on in. He says, no, I'm here to apologize for Ken Griffey Jr. And I said, no. I said, if Junior wants to apologize, he knows where we are. About 10 minutes later, Junior came in with that big smile, hot hat on backwards, and just said to me, he goes, Jimmy, I'm sorry. He goes, I just lost him for a second. I said, thank you very much, Ken. I really appreciate it. Thanks for coming to the room and see you out in the field.
We
developed a relationship right after that, meaning that we, you know, we always had pleasantries for each other after that.
We're talking to Jim Joyce here on the Bald Faced Truth Radio Show. You also have camaraderie with other umpires, and I think about some of the big moments. John Hirschbeck had lost a child to a disease, had a couple of children that were afflicted with it, and I'll never forget that Roberto Alomar mess that he was embroiled in. And Alomar, to me, always looked like the bad guy. You were in the middle of that. You were close with Hirschbeck, were you not?
Yeah, still am. That turned ugly really fast, and actually it turned even uglier after the fact. And I can remember like it was yesterday. It was a Friday night. I was at first base. John had the plate. John called a strike three on Roberto. Roberto took exception to it. They got into a heated argument, and, you know, saliva was flown through the air.
Yeah.
And after the game, obviously, you have to report that stuff and everything to the league office, which we did. The next day, John was actually holding a news conference in Toronto, and our room was probably as big as a good walk-in closet. And John had gone to the ballpark early, and we had heard on the radio going to the ballpark that one of the reporters was reporting that Roberto Alomar had said that John had changed since the death of his first son, John Jr.
Yeah.
And I said to my crew chief, Jim McKean, I said, we better get to the ballpark. I said, I know John's holding a conference, and somebody's going to ask him about that. And sure enough, we walked in the door. There was probably 20 reporters in there. And one of the reporters just, we were trying to push John to the back of the room to end the conference. And one of the reporters asked, and all hell broke loose. And, but you know what? It worked itself out like it usually does in baseball. And I'm positive to this day because John has a golf tournament for his second son, Michael, who had passed away as an adult. John holds a golf tournament for him like you do, John. And I think Roberto Alomar shows up every year.
That's interesting.
And it just shows that there is kind of a family togetherness to a certain degree after the wounds are healed.
Yeah, I'm looking at the story about that now. For people who don't know, this is September of 1996, and Hirschbeck's 8-year-old son had died of a rare brain condition 3 years earlier. His 9-year-old son also had the malady, and he's in that news conference. A reporter says to him that, hey, you've changed. Your personality got bitter, I guess is what Alomar said, after your son died. Hirschbeck, hearing that, reacts like I would react. I mean, he wants to run across and get at Roberto Alomar right now. And you're the one who stopped him, weren't you?
Yeah. I was the youngest on the crew and probably the fastest at the time, and I was able to catch John just as he – our locker room was literally right next door to the Orioles locker room. And I don't know how I caught him, but I did. I caught him just as he got inside the door. And the very first person sitting at the table there was Roberto Alomar. But John had a father's rage instead of an umpire's rage, if you know what I mean. An umpire's rage is totally different than a personal father's rage. And but you know what? Like I said, it ended up all working out. And, you know, the rest is history, I guess. So, and then John's second son, Michael, I believe passed away when he was 23. And he was a long time, would be the bat boy in Cleveland. And as a matter of fact, the 2013 World Series, John and I worked it together, and we got to celebrate Michael's last birthday at that World Series because Michael passed away, I think about 4 or 5 months later.
Jim, we got to take a quick break. I want you to stick around. On the other side of this break, I'm going to ask you about going to a Major League Baseball game as a fan. You're going to do it for the first time this weekend up in Seattle. Also, I want to know what you think of Major League Baseball to Portland. Much more with Jim Joyce coming up. Leave it right here on the Bald Faced Truth Radio Network. And if you have questions for Jim Joyce, tweet them at me, at John Canzano BFT. More with Jim Joyce next. Leave it here.
It's college football time, and we have you covered in pigskin. The best Oregon college football coverage this fall is on 102.9 and 750 The Game, presented by Frost Brewed Coors Light.
All right, we had a great start with this interview with Jim Joyce, who's currently renovating his mother-in-law's house, putting in hardwood floors and such. But this weekend, Jim Joyce, former Major League Baseball umpire, who was a crew chief and worked from 1987 to 2016 in Major League Baseball, 3 World Series, 3 All-Star games. People remember him for big calls, important calls. Also, like a lot of times umpires, when they're doing a great job, aren't noticed. You know, that's an interesting distinction. So this weekend, I'm told, Jim, that my friend Harvey Platt is going to take you up to Seattle to see the Dodgers and Mariners play. Clayton Kershaw's supposed to be on the mound. What's that going to be like?
It's going to be a long drive. I'm actually anticipating a blast, to tell you the truth. Harvey and I are driving up to Seattle, and Harvey just texted me yesterday that Kershaw is the probable pitcher, so he's fired up. I'll be very honest. It doesn't fire me up that much because I still look at it as a job that I was still doing.
Yeah.
But I'm sure that's going to change once I plant myself in the seat. My wife jokes with me all the time. you don't know what it's like sitting at a baseball game. She has sat at thousands of baseball games.
Yeah.
Being with me, and she goes, "You're going to get the experience of your life. You're not going to believe it." And I haven't been to a Major League Baseball game as a spectator, I think, since I was 14 years old.
Will it be Harvey difficult?
Harvey and I are going to drive up. I'll tell Harvey war stories as we're driving up to Seattle. But the cool thing about it is I'm going to get to see my number two guy that I worked the last 3 years with. I haven't seen Marvin Hudson since I retired. And he just got switched to that series, and I'm going to call him this afternoon, as a matter of fact, and he's going to be the crew chief for that series, so it's going to be pretty cool.
Will it be hard for you? Because when I go to a game, because I'm a media member, I have a hard time just being a fan because I'm always sort of thinking, what would I write? What would I say? What will the post game? Are they going to make the deadline? Will you be in the shoes of all those umpires during the game, or can you detach a little bit and just enjoy?
I have a feeling I'm going to be in the shoes of the umpire. I'll let you know when I get back after I go to the game,
yes.
But I just have that feeling. I know myself pretty well. I'm not in fan mode. Baseball was a big part of my life for 30, 41 years, as a matter of fact, 30 in the majors and 11 in the minor leagues. And I don't see myself being a fan yet, because I still have the work mentality and the ethic mentality of it. So I'm sure I'm going to sit there. I will probably watch the umpires more than I'll probably watch the play being made or whatever. I will probably instinctively look at the umpires.
Yeah.
You know, if it's going to be a close play or whatever, I'll look at the umpires and see where they're at. And because that's what I did on the field, you know, when I was a crew chief and stuff like that. You just have the instinct to do that through experience and everything. I'll look and see what the guys are doing. And I'm sure I'll enjoy the game and everything like that, but I'm kind of like you, John. I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't know yet. But I have a feeling I'll probably look at – because when I watch a game on TV or parts of a game, because I really haven't really watched that much, I watch the umpires.
Yeah.
And it's just second nature, really.
Jim Joyce is our guest. You know, you mentioned the drive to Seattle. There's a Major League Baseball to Portland effort going on with the Portland Diamond Project. Would Portland work as a Major League Baseball city? You've been to all of them. Is this city where Major League Baseball needs to go if we're talking expansion or relocation?
100% absolutely. Without a doubt. Portland is definitely a Major League city. It's a Major League city without a baseball team. That's exactly what it is. And there is no doubt in my mind with the surrounding area, with Vancouver on the other side of the river, the Portland area, the Portland downtown area is without a doubt 100% a Major League Baseball city.
You won me right there. I mean, I think we're overdue, and I see the attendance in Oakland. Major League Baseball announced 10,400 last night. And we know that real number is probably somewhere between, you know, 7 and 10,000 probably legitimately in the park. That makes me sad for the Bay Area. I grew up there. But I say, you know what, in Portland, let's give us a crack at that. I mean, I think we'd put 15 to 25,000 into the stadium on a Monday night even. And given that it's a big game, I would have expected that game to be a near sellout.
Yeah, I agree. And It's a fickle sport a little bit sometimes, depending on how your team is doing and stuff. But I do believe, I remember when Baltimore built the new stadium in the downtown area. Cleveland did the same thing.
Yep.
And those attendance figures rose dramatically in the first 5 years. I think just with the newness of a new city like Portland, a 50,000 stadium, maybe even a little bit less, maybe like 40, you know, 42, 45, something like that. I don't think there'd be a problem, to be honest with you. I think there's a lot of baseball fans in the Portland area. And I look at Pittsburgh. Somebody asked me the other day, what would you do if you build a stadium in Portland? I said the very first thing I would do is direct the opened outfield, center field area to Mount Hood. And I tell you what, there wouldn't be a better view in baseball.
We're talking to Jim Joyce. And before I cut you loose, I appreciate everything you're doing coming on the show. I appreciate, too, that you golfed in the Bald Faced Truth Foundation Celebrity Golf Tournament this summer. You were a big hit. You helped us raise money for kids in the community. So thank you for that. I looked up your ejection profile when you were talking about Ken Griffey Jr. On June the 6th, 1989, you ejected Ken Griffey Jr. That was your first. Do you know who your most common ejectee was? You got him four times.
Ooh. Tony La Russa?
Tony La Russa, four times. What was it with you and Tony?
Really, it wasn't really much at all. There was never really any real shouting or screaming. It was always circumstantial. Weird plays. I remember probably the last time I ejected Tony was actually probably in San Francisco, as a matter of fact, if I remember correctly. And it was actually over a rookie umpire at first base, a AAA kid who had a really close play and actually got the play right. And Tony came out, and instead of going to him, he came to me. And I was behind the plate. And I said, Tony, you're arguing with the wrong guy. And I said, if you need to, you can argue with him, but I'm going to go with you. And he said to me, it's really kind of strange. He says, you guys change the way that you call a game by the size of the crowd. I said, Tony, that's very unfair. And I said, your day is over. And and the next day, like I said, reverting back a little bit, Tony came to the plate the next day and he said, Jimmy, he goes, I didn't even want to get ejected yesterday. He goes, my daughter's in town. She can't come into the locker room when I've been ejected. And I said, Tony, I'm sorry. As a matter of fact, he bet me a bottle of wine that the kid got the play wrong. And so my first comment when Tony came to the play was, I'll take white wine.
Yeah.
And he had this little smirk on his face. And that's when he said, he goes, I didn't even want to get ejected. He says, my daughter's in town.
I love that.
And you know what, John? I want to give you some kudos, too, because I know you don't like to do it for yourself, and rightly so. The golf outing that you put on was world class. And for your organization, it is absolutely worth it. And I will do that anytime, any place. If you ask me again, I'll be there with bells on.
Next summer, you're in.
Sounds good.
You're a big hit. All right, Jim Joyce, have fun at the game, all right? You're going to have to work hard, but detach yourself. Don't be an umpire for all nine innings.
if I catch myself, I'll walk up and get a soft pretzel or something.
Yes. All right.
Which I could never do before.
All right, take care. Thank you, Jim.
You too, John. Talk to you soon.
There he is, Jim Joyce, Major League Baseball umpire. I love that. He ejected Ken Griffey Jr., in 1989, June the 6th, he ejected Tony La Russa. And you know what? He didn't eject a lot of guys. I was looking at his career ejections. He only got six in the last 2 years of his career. And when you look at his ejection history, 73 in his entire career as an umpire. But good stories, and I'd love to be a fly on the wall for that trip up to Seattle with Harvey Platt driving Jim Joyce up to the game. Leave it right here. We'll talk more about Major League Baseball to Portland. Would it work? Of course it would work. For people following the Portland Diamond Project and hoping that Major League Baseball comes, all you have to do is look at Oakland and look at what goes on. The Mariners go to Oakland for a huge Monday night chasing a playoff position. These are two good teams. You've got good pitchers. You've got good players. This is going to be a big game. Everybody, the television ratings for it are going to be through the roof. But the stands in Oakland are empty. Major League Baseball reports 10,400 in the park. There wasn't 10,000 in that park. Somewhere between 5 and 10, probably more likely. I don't have time to count them up, but you look at the photographs. I mean, it's even around the dugouts and the good seats. I mean, it's not a game that is being attended by people in Oakland. And there's all this, you know, save baseball in Oakland. They're going to have to let people in free to save baseball in Oakland. At least, you know, the optics of it are bad. Not just bad for Oakland, bad for Major League Baseball. If you're Rob Manfred, the commissioner of Major League Baseball, you got a real problem. Because you had an important baseball game, even though it's a Monday night, even though there's other things going on in the Bay Area. I can guarantee you that people in Portland would have shown up on a Monday night to see the Seattle Mariners and the Portland A's play an important baseball game. And I'm a little disappointed, not just in, you know, the people in Oakland who are very defensive. Because, you know, they send out, they tweet out pictures of the stadium, and I'm like, hey, the drive's too far from Portland. Sorry, we couldn't fill it up for you. And they get mad about it. But, you know, if they're not showing up for games, I don't blame the fans in Oakland. I blame somebody else. It's not the fans' fault that they're not showing up to games in Oakland. I blame somebody altogether different. I'll tell you who that is next, and I'll tell you why Major League Baseball would work in Portland. Leave it right here. You got the bald face.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.